This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Rader Solutions. Rader creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as a complete IT department. Rader's motto is, "You just want it to work. We understand." If you're wondering if Rader can help your business, please visit RaderSolutions.com. Our focus today is on the upcoming December 8th vote on whether to amend the Home Rule Charter in Lafayette to split the city-parish council. If approved, the new Lafayette City Council and the new Parish Council would have 5 members each. The initiative seeks to ensure that city issues and parish issues are decided by elected representatives accountable to the people they govern. Our guest today, Will Kellner, is here to explain the issues and is representing the citizen organization Fix the Charter. Will is an attorney at the Lisco and Lewis law firm where he handles business and energy-related issues. And I do want to get in that before law school, I read that you were a college basketball coach, so you're a multifaceted guy.
Right. I'm a renaissance, a poor man's renaissance man of sorts.
I love that.
Right.
Will Kellner, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So I've looked online, I've looked on Facebook. I know from my work with city parish government that our charter is pretty confusing. And the big issue of the day is whether or not the city of Lafayette should have its own representation. So I'm really delighted to have you here and maybe explain this in ways that we can all understand.
Thanks. I appreciate you for having me. You're right. In the 1990s, and when I say we, I mean the community at the time. I was 10 and probably more concerned with video games than consolidated government. But we decided to change the way we governed ourselves in Lafayette Parish, and we instituted consolidated government. Except what we did wasn't particularly consolidated government.
Right.
We didn't really consolidate. We sort of merged the city parish councils, and everything else really stayed the same. We still had distinct municipalities. We still had a distinct parish. We just sort of collapsed the parish council and city council into one thing. Mm-hmm. And sort of that is, from there, the outgrowth of that has been sort of really bizarre government decisions that have to be made, a government structure that's needlessly complex. And the issue you hinted on sort of deprives citizens or residents of the city of Lafayette with the representation that people in other municipalities enjoy.
And what I've learned, you know, there was a deconsolidation effort a few years back, and it failed because I think people were looking at just going back to how it used to be, where we'd have redundancy in government. When this was passed in the 90s, Will, the effort was to save money, streamline government, have that council working together. And at the time, Lafayette did become part of the city parish council without its own council, but we had a majority. Lafayette, the city of Lafayette, I think was about 60% of the residents of Lafayette Parish at that point. Over the past 2 decades, the outlying small municipalities have grown at a faster rate, is that correct, than the city of Lafayette?
You're right. I think at the time, when this came about in the 90s, I think the conventional wisdom was that as compared to what they are now, Broussard and Youngsville were much smaller. Mm-hmm. And the conventional wisdom would have been that Lafayette, of all the municipalities, would have been the one to grow and continue to grow and, you know, gobble up some of the rest of the parish. And the city would get bigger. The other municipalities would kind of stay what they always were. And any, you know, potential inequities or problems that would arise with consolidation would kind of be minimal because of the fact that Lafayette would have the lion's share of the population.
Right.
And sort of the opposite has happened. Lafayette has grown, but Youngsville has grown explosively. Broussard's grown explosively. Mm-hmm. Scott and Dusaw and Karen Crow have also probably grown, maybe not at the same rates as those other ones. So instead of sort of the demographic trends minimizing some of the downside of consolidation, it's exacerbated it.
Right.
And that's where we are today, where you know, depending on what the 2020 census says, the majority of Lafayette Parish's population could reside outside of the city of Lafayette.
And so while we've been operating the past 20 years, as you said, Youngsville, Karen Crow, Scott, Broussard, they all have their own city councils, their own mayors, and so they operate independently, and then they also have representatives that are elected from those areas serving as city parish representatives. And I know for me, when I first started seeing the results of this is when you look at issues such as our city, Lafayette City Police, Lafayette Utility System, people have votes on the outcome, like, you know, bond issues or the budget, and they don't even live within the city. And that's when I started seeing, especially with this LUS issue we've had in the news recently, you have people that don't even live in the city of Lafayette introducing ordinances that may have the right outcome, let's say, but they actually should not be at the table discussing what we do with our city-owned utility.
Right. It's this is, again, sort of, you know, it's born of the fact that when we, you know, quote unquote, consolidated, we didn't really consolidate. The municipal boundaries remained real. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the parish council, the city parish council, governs both the parish and the city. And like you pointed out, the other municipalities have their own city council, they have their own mayors. But let's, for instance, just look at the council. Only one of the districts is entirely within the city of Lafayette.
And which one is that?
That's District 6.
That's Bruce Conk.
Bruce Conk is 100% city. Others are, my district is Liz Hebert, and I think she's over 90. I think Nanette Cook is either over 90 or right at it. William Terrio's district, which I think is one, don't quote me on one, it may not be one, but he's the Youngsville district. He's got like 6%, and others have less than 50% city residents. And that's just the way it sets up, and whether that's fair or not, we can talk about later. But there is only one holy city district. And so what you could have is you could have a city, Lafayette, which would be governed by a council of nine, eight of which who would be from outside the city, and also governed by an executive, the mayor, who would be, there's no need for him to be a city resident to be elected. He just has to be a resident of the parish.
And then they're voting on where our taxes go.
City issue. So you could have eight council members who might be voting to spend city tax dollars when they don't even pay those taxes based on their residency.
I think the Boston Tea Party might have been a similar issue, maybe not quite as dramatic.
But so in a way, it's the same idea, though. The same idea is that those back in the founding of our country, we threw tea in the harbor because there was taxation without representation. And what we have here is essentially taxation with unfair representation. The Lafayette taxpayers are paying city bills and they're paying city taxes, and their vote isn't worth as much as city people in other council districts, and just the fact that someone from Broussard has a say in how those tax dollars are spent when people from Lafayette have no corresponding say as to how tax dollars are spent in Broussard or Youngsville. And and we don't want to be too sort of tribal or, you know, envious of the other municipality situations, because we're a small parish and we need to get along together.
And none of this was intended. It wasn't intended.
It wasn't intended. But the fact of the matter is the municipal boundaries have remained, and there are consequences to that. And one of those consequences should simply be that we respect those, and people from municipalities govern those municipalities. People from outside them don't.
So on December 8th, we're going to have another election. We're here on actually Election Day on November 6th, but coming up very quickly, we'll be voting on this issue, and everyone in the parish will be voting on this. Would you explain some of the high points of what we'll be voting on? And is it just one vote, or is it going to be several things?
It's going to be one proposition, one thing on the ballot, but it's going to be several amendments. The major amendment is the split of the councils, but, you know, a charter is essentially Lafayette Parish's constitution. And so, as you would anticipate in a legal document like a charter, there are several provisions that have to be altered based on the fact that the councils are splitting.
Right,
to resolve, make it consistent and resolve any issues that would be created. And so that's the major sort of, those are the series of amendments. As practically speaking, there's also now the Lafayette Public Utility Authority would go away. And because the Lafayette Public Utility Authority is an invention that was created to remedy sort of one of the problems of consolidation. Mm-hmm. So the Lafayette Public Utility Authority really is the first say in the governance of LUS, even though it's kind of got it, it's checked by the council. And when consolidation started to happen, we were like, wait a second, we've got to govern LUS. LUS is owned by city people. Mm-hmm. But we don't think, for instance, not to pick on Mr. Terrio, but he's got 8% city residents. He shouldn't have the same say in LUS
as Bruce Conk.
As Bruce Conk, who's got 100%. Right. So mm-hmm. we created a 5-person authority, and it's the 5 council members with majority city constituencies. The other 4 are non-majority constituencies. And that's what we have. But the LPUA is not really fair because Mr. Terrio does represent city residents, and they should have a voice in the management of LUS. And so his city residents that he represents are disenfranchised. And Liz Hebert, who's my rep, and she may only have, or council member, she may only have an 8% non-city constituency, but now those people have a say in LUS, mm-hmm. and it's not fair. So when you have a city council that's elected by the residents of the city, then the right. city council can then be the appropriate authority to govern LUS, and everyone is rightfully enfranchised in the management of that entity.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. So right now we have 9 city parish council members. So what will happen if this initiative passes?
So the councils will essentially split. The city will have a 5-person council elected by 5 districts, you know, within mm-hmm. the city, and the parish will have a 5-person council elected 5 districts parish-wide.
Okay. Now, where can people go? I know we're going to have a lot more we can talk about, but I know that there's a big, I think I read over 120 volunteers have joined this effort, and there was an organization started called Fix the Charter, where people can go online and look and see, I guess, the not only the provisions of the initiative, but also what the new districts would look like. I think you've got quite a bit of information about frequently asked questions. Can you talk about that? This must, it's like a groundswell of people that want to see this happen.
Sure. This is, yeah, it's really exciting. And like I said earlier, it's something that I think it's truly a big tent, and it cuts across partisan lines. You know, I think local government's about solving problems, mm-hmm. and sometimes we get affixed to our party labels, and that prevents us from solving real practical problems. But Fix the Charter, it's sort of twofold. One, it's kind of the name of this grassroots organization, mm-hmm. and then it's also the name of our PAC, which is to raise money, which I'll talk about later. But yeah, it's great. We have Fix the Charter sort of as the grassroots movement. We have city residents, we have non-city residents,
mm-hmm. all ages,
side, north side,
yeah.
old, young, black, white, Democrat, Republican, mm-hmm. and it really is sort of a, like there's some unity that we see a problem that is sort of repugnant to American ideals, and we want to fix it, mm-hmm. and we think we can work together to do it. So that's what this is, and yeah, there's people who are volunteering from, you know, dedicating their talents designing graphics or...
It's a great website.
Yeah. So that is
looks
absolutely
good.
No credit.
You didn't do
mine.
All that, Will?
No,
you didn't
not
design that?
At all. And it would have been an unmitigated disaster if I did. But, right. And so then we have people who are helping us fundraise, people who mm-hmm. have volunteered to, you know, go stand on street corners or walk neighborhoods. And so it's exciting, and it's mm-hmm. There's energy. It feels good to be part of the political process when it's positive and optimistic.
Right.
It's been great. And then so the PAC was an outgrowth of that because mm-hmm. this is still 2018 and it's still politics still requires money to get your message out. So we started, a political action committee where our donors are, you know, they're publicly disclosed.
Right.
There's nothing to
right.
hide. And that's what sort of that Fix the Charter is. It's a PAC and it's a grassroots movement, but we're very, very excited about it. It's been fun to be a part of.
And sometimes people get the heebie-jeebies when they hear the word PAC, you know, PAC, Political Action Committee. But in fact, I guess a couple of things. Government can't, they can't go out and spend money, and they can't even probably take a position on this. It's an educational effort, but there we have had people come into our community that don't live here and have poured money into negative ads. And so the only way to get information out is it costs money to print things and, like you said, design it and mail it. And it just doesn't happen by magic.
No, that's, I mean, it just, it costs. You know, that's just the way. And, you know, social media in a lot of ways has given us some ability to get our message out at a low cost.
But so many people don't look at, right. Like my husband, if you just had it on Facebook, John would never see it.
No.
I mean, it's just, there's so many people that just stay away from that.
And so, you know, and printing signs cost money, and t-shirts and everything we were trying to do to get our message out cost money. And it was really exciting. You know, when we started this and we were kind of soliciting the first round of donations, our first two donations were probably from people who would never really donate to the same cause because they're so ideologically different on the normal political spectrum. Yeah, and then, but it's something where I think that's what made it seem to us like, okay, we've got a message here that should be unifying. And, you know, there'll be opposition and there'll be people who, these are charter amendments. This isn't the sexiest issue out there.
Right.
And there'll be people who vote against changing the status quo, and there'll be people who just are reflexively no to anything government does. But we think if we can educate people and sort of use the strength of this broad base of support we have, then we have a great chance at succeeding.
That's great.
Yeah.
I know when it came up before, I want to pull up a quote. I reached out to Don Bakke, and I used to work with Upper Lafayette Economic Development. And in the prior look at the charter, I was concerned about it because I was worried about the parish residents that I thought would just be left behind. And I know this is an effort for a council to be able to focus solely on parish issues, which is sorely needed with drainage and all. And I know Don Bakke had been against this before, and I know he's supporting this. And his quote is, "This amendment to the charter will help fix the problems that have been apparent through the years. It helps maintain a workable and fair consolidated government. I was opposed to deconsolidation, and I am in favor of this fix." And I wanted to share that because I know he was a very visible voice, a vocal voice out there in the past. And so many people that were against it, I think, see this has been well thought out, and it's time to make this fix, or we're going to have to wait quite a few years. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, we're obviously glad to have Don's support, and we're glad to have the support of, you know, other people who might have either been for consolidation back in the 90s or opposed deconsolidation in 2011. And I think you brought up a couple points there that I want to touch on. You know, we are a small parish geographically, and it does make sense for us to recognize some efficiencies in government. We all want government to be efficient. So when you talk about things like drainage or roads, you know, if we've got a city truck, it doesn't make sense, you know, we're fixing a ditch. It doesn't make sense that we need to send out a different truck to fix the ditch when we cross city lines, or the same thing for roads. And so we need to be efficient. We need to be smart because that's what taxpayers expect. And so this allows us to address some of that while still recognizing some of the efficiencies of consolidation but fix the underlying problems. With regard to the parish, you're right. The parish has, you know, budget issues, and it's got issues that are different than the city.
Right.
And the city needs, the parish and the city both need dedicated councils to focus on that issue. The parish, this isn't going to solve all the parish's problems. There's still going to be budget issues, and we have to address as a community, as a parish, as a whole. But I want to bring up sort of a result of the parish budget issues that came up recently that really highlights sort of the problems of our current structure. So the parish owns a parking garage downtown across from the courthouse, which is now shuttered. But before it was shuttered, it needed to be fixed. Mm-hmm. And the parish didn't have the money to fix it. So the solution was to sell the garage to the city. Now, that is...
Here, you take it.
Right. It's like playing hot potato with a dilapidated parking garage.
And which we need.
Right, which we need. Yeah. You know, we have, you know, parish employees who park
here
there every day, right.
We all go to the courthouse.
That's right.
Even though we don't want to. You know.
That's right, and people use the courthouse.
Yeah.
But, let's leave aside for the point that this is a parish liability, and then just sort of foisting it on the city would make the city subsidize the parish. What really got me is, if anyone's been in a transaction, whether it's buying anything, selling anything, your house, your car, whatever, a seller is trying to get as much money as he can. Mm-hmm. And a buyer is trying to pay as little as she can. in a transaction. And here we have a parking garage, which is an asset, and who knows the value of it. The way you ascertain the value is what people are willing to pay and what people are willing to sell it for. And the mayor president, on behalf of the parish, is negotiating with the mayor president on behalf of the city, and the parish council is negotiating for the parish, and the city council is negotiating for the city. And there's just those types of transactions really show the conflicts of interest that are inherent in our system. And when you separate those councils, and they each have people who can fight for the interest of the parish and the interest of the city, then I think people can trust government more, because it doesn't sort of seem like you've got these weird transactions that no one really knows how or they were confected and why and the reasoning behind them.
Right.
And you don't know who to hold accountable. If it's a bad deal for the parish, then it's a good deal for the city. Right. And if it's a bad deal for the city, it's a good deal for the parish. So
where is that? Is that in limbo right now? The garage?
As of right now, it is. The city did not go through with the transaction. The parish still owns it. It's shuttered.
Because when I went to vote, we got to park free. Because you can't park in the garage. It's unsafe because it hasn't been maintained, and they're letting us park free on the street, but something's got to give.
Well,
so
the question then becomes, if you're parking free, who's losing out on the parking revenue?
Yeah.
Is that the
and
city?
And there's not enough parking to boot. So that could be another show.
Right.
And I know I've noticed in the past, like we had such a low voter turnout in the parish in April of this year, and one of the big taxes that went down was the library tax renewal. And when you look at the way people are voting, you can see that people in the city seem to be, the closer they are to the urban core, they're supportive of tax measures. And then people outlying, not so much. And so I know that's not part of this discussion, but there's so many intricacies that you can see the way the city and the parish differ. And the small towns have got unique personalities within this parish.
That's exactly right. And I don't want to paint the city people as the tax lovers, because I think it is more nuanced than that. And here's my point is, the South, people in the South side are always like, we're the staunch anti-tax people. But Youngsville, for a while, imposed on themselves, and they had the highest sales tax in the state, the municipality of Youngsville.
They've invested in themselves.
Right, and they've invested in Youngsville, and they've got a beautiful sports complex, and they've done things in their city that they wanted to see done. And I would argue they were able to accomplish those things because they have a city council that's responsive to the city of Youngsville's needs. And their needs, they wanted a sports complex, they wanted all sorts of things, and they've done a great job. They're growing explosively, and they're having wonderful success. Our issues in Lafayette are different. I mean, and in a lot of places, we're dealing with aging infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with, historic neighborhoods. We're dealing with blight. How do we revitalize an urban core? Our problems really are more of redevelopment, whereas some of the outlying municipalities are ones of development, going from green acre to a commercial development. So I don't want to paint it in terms of taxes, because I don't think that's what it is. But I think it is. I think the priorities are different, and they're just different based on the stages of the communities. I mean, Broussard's goals are different. Karen Crow's goals are different, and that's okay. We certainly have shared goals because we're all part of the same parish. And when Youngsville's successful, is Lafayette successful, and vice versa. But we each know that within the municipalities, we have unique priorities, and those unique priorities are best addressed by councils elected by the people of those municipalities.
Right. Have we talked about the main parts of the initiative? Is there anything that I should have asked you technically?
No. I mean, I think, it is a governing document, and there you can look at it and you can try to play on words and say that there's things there'll be problems in the future. And what I always say is this going to be perfect? It's not going to be. Is this going to, deliver? Is this going to make us the best government ever? And it's no. And so we're going to try to split the councils to give the city a little more autonomy, to give the parish a council focused on its needs. And I'll bet you, that there will be some issue because that is inherent in all governments. If we would have found the perfect government structure by now, all political subdivisions would be set up the exact same way.
Right.
But what I think this is I think this is a step in the right direction. I think this is a step towards empowering the city of Lafayette and the parish of Lafayette to address their unique concerns. I think it's a step to bring us back in line with what most of us consider to be traditional ideals of the American democratic form of government.
Right. I just hate to see us end up like Baton Rouge. I grew up there, and East Baton Rouge Parish has had towns splitting off. There's been a lot of controversy and fighting because people aren't happy with the way government has been running. And I think this is a really good step in getting the situation righted for Lafayette Parish.
I'm a firm believer that the closer you bring control to the people, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a neighborhood addressing an issue in their neighborhood, or if it's a city addressing an issue in their city, or a parish in their parish, the closer you bring government to the people, the more trustworthy, or the more trust they will place in it. Well, everyone is a little bit distrustful of government, and rightfully so. But when you mm-hmm. make that problem worse by having convoluted government, or by having people vote in your city who aren't live in your city, then you're needlessly creating distrust in government, which is, you know, something that already struggles from a lack
right.
of trust.
That's well said. Yeah. And we're here with Jason Sikora and Raider Solutions, and I know you've got some good questions over there, and you don't live in the city of Lafayette.
I think I still live in technically the city, but I'm right on the edge.
Uh-huh.
First of all, thank you for being here, and thank you for bringing up this issue, because I didn't know about it, and it seems awfully messy the way it is now. So hopefully this can get worked out. So I just want a couple things. First of all, what's the website again?
It's fixthecharter.com.
Fixthecharter.com.
Right.
And so this is going to redraw district lines, right?
That's correct.
And then what happens to the current council members that are in place right now?
So that's part of why the timing of this fell when it did. The current council members will finish their current terms.
Okay.
And then after that, the current council and its 9-member city parish form will no longer exist. So for the council members who are term limited, one thing that is mm-hmm. in the amendments is that their term limits will apply to the new council. So they they don't get to restart their clocks. For those who aren't term limited, they would then have to decide whether they want to be city council people mm-hmm. or parish council people. Now, the ones who don't live in the city couldn't be city council persons, obviously, council members. The ones who live in the city could decide to run for a city council position, or if they wanted to run for a parish, they could run for parish council person in their district.
That makes sense. And finally, what are the arguments against this?
So I always hate to do the opposition's work, but in the interest of giving people full information, and there may be some that I omit, I think there is a concern among some that the council's 5-person councils are too small.
Oh, okay.
That number is not large enough. It's too few members of the council. I guess since I get to bring up the opposition, I get to rebut them as well. Since I'm,
that could be fixed at a later date if it turns out that is too small, and maybe it is, then you fix it after the fact.
And so, and obviously we're doing here, that, you know, this isn't something we're going to chisel in stone. It's going to be in a Word document. but it can be amended. That's obviously mm-hmm. proof that we're doing it now. But I think if you would have gone to 2 9-person councils, there would have been a howl that you were doubling the size of government and increasing cost to taxpayers.
Yep.
And we're going to try it. And if we think that the representation isn't adequate, then later there can be an amendment to address that issue. There are some people that say that this won't solve the parish's problems. This isn't fixing a problem. This isn't going to fix the parish's budget because this isn't a revenue measure. Mm-hmm. There will be no change in additional revenue generated because of this. I would argue that it's fixing a serious problem, which is sort of the unfair representation, not only for residents of the city of Lafayette, but sort of this council of divided loyalties and conflict of interest that we currently have. That's another criticism. Those are the main two, sort of the 5-person council and how that splits up. And I think some people feel that the process was rushed when to get it to the ballot. And again, I would sort of say is that, you know, if you just say it was rushed and you look at it without considering the context, maybe you can reach that conclusion. But this is part of the political process. And to even get this, for Lafayette to have its own autonomy as a city, the entire parish has to vote on it. It's because it's an amendment to the parish charter.
Makes sense.
Right. I would disagree in that just because why should someone from outside of Lafayette really get to vote on my independence? But you're right, it does make sense because it's a change to the parish document. But to even get it to a vote of the people, we had to have at least 6 council members vote for it. And what we just reviewed is that there's four council members who are majority non-city constituencies. So, and if the 2020 census flips in an appreciable way, then there could be five council members who have majority non-city constituencies, and the balance of power on the city council could switch. So you have to have the votes to get mm-hmm. it to the ballot. And this was just, you know, it had the votes, and that was the process that got us there. And so some people think it was done too quickly or was rushed. I mean, as Jan can attest, we've been hemming and hawing about mm-hmm. consolidation and whether it works and the problems with it for a decade, if not longer.
It's
and
been so studied.
At some part, you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, mm-hmm. and you have to take a step and act in some way. And we think it was done in a thoughtful manner. People may gripe about that, but we took a step, and we'll mm-hmm. address concerns as they arise in the future.
Excellent. My final question, and yes. I was going to skip it over, but you answered it, was how do you actually get a special election with something like this on the ballot, but you got the votes from...
Right. The council amends it.
Okay.
They propose the language that's to be mm-hmm. amended, and then it's an amendment to the Constitution, the charter, and it's got to go to the people to ratify that.
And there was a 7-2 vote on the City Parish Council in favor of bringing this to the people.
Okay.
So the two against it don't represent the city of Lafayette. So what Will was saying is there could be an imbalance down the line where we could never get on the ballot. And instead of a tea party, I guess we'd have a Boudin bash or something. You
know? Right. Who knows? We pour community coffee into the pavilion. But let's be fair that two of the people who did vote for it, Jay Castile mm-hmm. and Knockout, they represent majority non-city constituencies. So it's not as if people outside this city are against it, nor do I distrust them, nor do I.
Right.
But the benefits for non-city people are not as apparent because they already enjoy their own autonomy and they mm-hmm. sort of just get to mm-hmm. dip their toe into this. And it's not as big of an issue as it is to them as it is for City of Lafayette residents.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If I can just say, I think this is a big deal for anybody in Lafayette. And if you've listened to this podcast, make sure you get all of your friends to listen to this podcast. It's only a half hour. That's your drive to work. You need to hear this. You put it so clear. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Will Kellner. Yeah. This is a pleasure to get to know you and to thank you for what you're doing for our community. I'm really... glad to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you. This is a labor of love that I know you do, and our community benefits from it.
Thank you.
Because otherwise, you know, this helped us get our message out, and I think it's helped me to educate people before they go to the polls, which
is
important.
It's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure. So I want to thank Will Kellner today, an attorney with Lisco & Lewis and secretary of Fix the Charter. And for more information, again, please go to fixthecharter.com. To our listeners, thank you so much for your support of Discover Lafayette. As I said, we tape here at Raider Solutions. We're grateful for your support. Jason Sikora for helping us. And for this interview and all of our interviews, you can go to discoverlafayette.net or you can go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. Please subscribe and then rate and review. It'll help me sustain this effort to be a positive community voice. And thank you for listening. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.